Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I assume he's not.
Right.
I don't think Terry Rozier is in jail, but they're on leave, which means Chauncey Billups will not coach the Portland Trailblazers, but I believe Chauncey Billups will get paid by the Portland Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. Now, I assume there is conduct clauses in play here if you're the Portland Trailblazers, and you have to let this legal process play out. And if you discover that there is something that falls under that conduct clause, you can fire Chauncey Billups at no cost to you and perhaps recoup the money from his leave. I don't know that for sure, but I know firing with cause is very much a thing. Mm-hmm. And I assume I don't know how that works with players' contracts, but I'm very confident it can work with a coach's contract.
I would think it'd be the same for a player.
Because there was at least a conversation with I'm not trying to pick on it. Like, would Eric Musselman be fired before he ever coached a game when he got that DUI? Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah, I would think so. And I'm sure, I would think there's got to be something within the CBA that allows them to sit Rozier while something is under investigation. I wouldn't think they have to have a conviction or proof,
right,
or something like,
yeah,
that. While we investigate this, you're they don't have this, but you're on the pup list.
Different sport. Like, remember the commissioner's exempt list. I say remember it like it doesn't exist anymore. The commissioner's exempt list in the NFL, where we don't want you around while this is being investigated. So you're going on this list. You can't come back this year or for whatever period of time it was, but you'll get paid. I think Adrian Peterson went on that list. I can't remember if Adrian Peterson went on that list after that thing or not. I know who did. A handful of guys have, but they got paid for that. While the process was playing out, and then a suspension would come in, or it wouldn't, and that would be that. Jill just sent me a tweet, and shout out to assistant producer Jill Adge.
Shout out Jill Adge,
who is helping us navigate this insane story. Someone pulled the film of the March 23rd game in question and said that Terry Rozier was just running around, like Terry Rozier was completely normal, playing basketball, came out after a timeout, sat on the bench just fine, and after a bit, just randomly agonized in pain, started grabbing his leg, and left.
Oh, my God.
And then never played again. I don't know. This was a game in March. So not playing again the rest of the season is 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm. 2-3 weeks.
It's about 2-3 weeks. Yeah, probably closer to 3 weeks than two.
You know, the other game that they always put out there that was just, it became a joke, but it really is, like, awful, is the clips they have when he played the Cavs. Mm-hmm. And I think you've seen it before, because they were talking about it before, but the Cavs are wearing, like, the City Connect, and it's, like, baby blue. Mm-hmm. And Terry Rozier is just, it's some of the worst basketball I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I remember when this came out first, they had that clip and we were kind of laughing at it. Everybody was kind of laughing at it. But man, like, he was so bad. It was like, yeah, this isn't real. This isn't how you really play. But this can't be how Terry Rozier really plays basketball. It can't be. I found it. Do you want to?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me shoot it to you.
Well, no, you okay? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
Because you got it already up. So.
Tag if you can. Tag ESPN instead of me.
Oh,
because that's the account that's open.
But the way he
Kyle was smart enough to stop logging into his Twitter account.
There you go.
And having to deal with the odd searches that would often pop up.
The way he was playing in that game was crazy.
Oh, God, it's from the Hater Report. This is going to be spectacular.
It was insane. It was like, nah, this can't be real. This can't
be. Bro, is this man Terry Rozier?
Oh, I'm a mute this just in case.
Like, this can't be Terry Rozier really playing basketball.
All right, so we're oh, okay. So he's essentially just
look at this one. Look at this one.
They're dribbling out. Oh,
what?
Wow.
Watch the next one.
Oh, this is crazy. I remember this clip now. This is pretty bad. Missed a step
one.
Back by 4 feet.
Airballed another one. Well, that one just hit the rim.
Well, great. Now the NBA is investigating Dylan Cardwell after that free throw attempt last night. Jeez. Oh, goodness gracious.
I mean, this is some... Terry Rozier, a good ball player. Like, he was... Some of these passes and stuff are just crazy.
He's airballed 3 shots in this clip. Oh, they got little
Not
buddy
Terry.
There. They got little buddy right there. Oh man.
Jeez.
Wow. Wow. So this goes back to something we were discussing during the commercial break, is like, should the NBA have handled this differently? Like, transparency in a situation like this is really important, at least in my opinion. Because we've heard the phrase so many times, and I believe it's applicable here. I believe it always makes sense, and it's the cover-up is often worse than the crime.
Yeah.
If you pinpoint something being wrong here with Terry Rozier or Jonte Porter or whoever, you address it, you talk about it as a league, and you keep it. You're Adam Silver. You stand in front of the firing squad. Mm-hmm. You bring the NBA's attorneys up there. You bring your investigators up there. You do whatever. You hold a full on press conference with Pablo Torre in the front row, and you answer every question that is asked. But if there is any way that Pablo or Winhurst or whoever can prove that the NBA knew about this and told Terry Rozier to sit the rest of the season. Mm. Without acknowledging the public or acknowledging to the public what was going on, that is a massive, massive issue.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way you laid it out is exactly how it's gotta happen. You've gotta do that. You've gotta take your medicine and get in front of all of this, right? The thing that I'm thinking of though is was Terry the same year after Jonte Porter? Was that the same NBA season?
2023. Jonte was last year, no?
Oh, I thought they were the same. Okay.
So this game, I've got the game that we talked about where he was on the bench, the last game that he played is dated March 23rd, 2023.
Got you.
Jonte, I think, was last season.
That's right, 24-25
season.
So, well, it's another way. Thing. At that time, they're like, yo, we'll sweep this under the rug. Mm. Then Jonte comes out, and they're like, bro, we can't keep sweeping this stuff under the rug. And they came out and did everything that you said with Jonte Porter. In 2023, maybe they thought they could just kind of skate on by for a little bit. Like you said, the way you just laid out how they should have handled it, that's how they should have handled it. But Maybe that was the thinking. And they got Jonte Porter. They're like, we can't do that again. So then they got transparent in that situation and really just crossed their fingers that the Rozier stuff will go away. It didn't.
Reading that tweet where Bob Lotori's like breaking, Terry Rozier's being arrested right now. What? What is going on? He got a statement from Terry Rozier's lawyer, too. It's certainly an interesting direction to go. Here's what the statement from Terry Rozier's lawyer to Pablo Torre says. We have represented Terry Rozier for over a year. A long time ago, we reached out to these prosecutors to tell them we should have an open line of communication. They characterized Terry as a subject, not a target. But at 6 a.m. this morning, they called to tell me FBI agents were trying to arrest him in a hotel. It is unfortunate that instead of allowing him to self-surrender, they opted for a photo op. They wanted the misplaced glory of embarrassing a professional athlete with a perp walk. That tells you a lot about the motivations in this case. They appear to be taking the word of spectacularly incredible sources rather than relying on actual evidence of wrongdoing. Terry Rozier was cleared by the NBA, and these prosecutors revived that non-case. Terry is not a gambler, but he is not afraid of a fight, and he looks forward to winning this fight. Again, that's Jim Trusty, who is Terry Rozier's attorney. Buddy, we've got video evidence.
Exhibit A.
Exhibit A was that reel we just played from TikTok. Man, I'm going to search Terry Rozier's name real quick because I have not come across a single photo. Just a quick scroll. Sorry, everybody. Scrolling. I have not come across a single photo of Terry Rozier doing a perp walk. So if the idea, if Mr. Trusty's, I just noticed the time. I'm sorry, Jesse. I'll get us out. If that assessment is accurate, then the prosecutors have done a terrible job. Because that photo is not circulated anywhere on the internet. I have a photo of Terry Rozier leaving federal custody. Mm-hmm. I have that photo, but I don't have one of him being brought in. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but I can't find it. One search led me to the one of him being released. We'll come back. We're going to shift our attention back to the Kings, probably. Matt George is going to join us. We'll definitely shift our attention back to the Kings. It's Thilo and Casey, brought to you by Sky River Casino on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Matt George is going to join us coming up here in just a couple of minutes. We're monitoring this situation that is continuing to evolve in the NBA, with this gambling ring, I guess, involving, at the very least, Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier. You said there was something that disappointed you last night in the Kings game.
Yeah, man. I thought Zach LaVine as a whole played a good game.
Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed in his fourth quarter. And it went into kind of his reputation as a player. Right? Like when the game gets tight, situations get tight,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't perform at his best. And, you know, it is who he's kind of shown himself to be in this league, is somebody that maybe isn't always like super aggressive and does the things that DeMar does, right, in clutch time. DeMar, like, give me the ball, like, I'm going to work, this is what we do. Zach didn't do that last night. He had six shots in the fourth quarter. Two or three of them were kind of late, like the step back three. He missed two other three-pointers late in the game. But I wanted to see him attacking the way he did in that first half. He was just electric in that first half. And I wanted to see more of that in the closing minutes of the game when things were getting tight.
Yeah.
And that was disappointing to see, because this is an opportunity for Zach LaVine to show, like, I can be everything that you guys said I'm not. Mm-hmm. You know, I can be the leader of a team. I can be a number one. I'm not just a talented guy. I'm him as well. And still a lot of time and yet to be determined, you know, what happens this year for him. But in that moment, that felt like a bit of a missed opportunity for him. And I was disappointed to see that, because he was having a heck of a game before that. And I would have liked to have seen that same aggression in that fourth quarter when the game was kind of slipping away.
Yeah, that would have been great. That would have been great to have him there. DeMar is so good in the fourth quarter. He's so regularly good.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter, the Kings are going to need more than that. And it's important to note. This is one of the many tough aspects of last night's game. There's a point where, you know, normally this happens late in the fourth quarter for me, where it's like you get to a point where you can't lose this game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the demise happened so quickly in the third quarter that by the time we got a fourth, it was a fight. And, you know, I think the game was tied in the last 90 seconds or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, man, you don't want to lose this game. And it's not because you blew a 20-point lead. It's not because you're on the road. It's not because it's opening night. It's because you've gotten this far without Domantas Sabonis. You've gotten this far without Keegan Murray. And every time you can steal a win without both of those guys on the floor, you're doing your overall season a huge, huge favor. Anytime you can win games without a full complement of players, you're doing your season a huge favor. And you had this right there for you with a handful of guys that were playing really well, and you weren't able to do it. Even in the moment that things were slipping away, Devin was living at the free throw line, and you couldn't find a way. You know, the Zach LaVine foul, you talk about Zach LaVine kind of not having that clutch moment. The foul on the three-pointer, man, was...
That was tough. Man, that was tough. You can't close out that way. Especially with a guy like Dylan Brooks. I'm not saying leave him open or anything, but the last thing you want to do is put him on the line for three. And that was tough from Zach, man. And like I said, he had a good game. He had a great game in that first half. And even in that third quarter as well, he was continuing to cook. But it got brought down a notch because of that fourth quarter. And that was disappointing to see.
I really hate to do this to our buddy Matt George. We're obviously waiting for him to join us. But I want to hear from Doug Christie.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And Matt wasn't there, so I want to hear from Doug. And so, Matt, I'm sorry. Here's Sean Cunningham. clip courtesy of Sean Cunningham in case you're all right. Matter of fact, let me see if I could do my buddy a solid. Let me check here. Yeah, I was looking to see if James had it. James didn't have it. Okay, here's Doug Christie.
Sorry.
Hey, Doug, I hope you don't mind me asking this.
Yeah. Don't.
Usually when it starts that way, I do, but go ahead.
Have an organization, a team contacted about these activities and going on about the gambling?
You know, we have no – that's an ongoing investigation. We have no comments about that, bro. Yeah.
Day later.
Still shout out Tone. Got to ask.
Yeah, in many ways.
Hey, Doug, have federal investigators contacted you about that Los Angeles Lakers series yet? I think they got a lot of questions.
You know, we talked a lot about a lot of different things, but, you know, defend, rebound, and share. Those are overarching principles. And if you look at that, the defense wasn't to the level we needed. We did not rebound the ball. 18-9 on the offensive glass, 51-37, I believe, overall. And then sharing the basketball, got into too many ISO situations in the first half, got lulled into making some shots and thinking that that was the way to play. The ball has some energy. We have to move the ball, let everybody touch the basketball. And then we have incredible scores. In those moments when they need to, they will. It just, there's a flow and there's a rhythm and there's a vibration to this game that we'll find it. We'll find it.
I see the players talking a bit after practice. What's kind of the overall message between you guys?
It's a good vibe. That's what the message is. I think that they, like, listen, credit to Phoenix. They got a win, but in many ways, our guys are like, you know, we let one get away, coach, and that bothers us. And it should bother you. Wins in this league are very, very hard to come by. And I think everybody understands that. And now it's back to the drawing board against an even tougher team in Utah.
I know several coaches that have been here with the Kings before. Before you would always want their veteran players to speak up and call some of that out. It seemed like some of that was happening there at half court.
No, they don't. You know, you would want that as a coach, but, you know, I ask them. Sometimes they got something, sometimes they don't. What you don't want is you don't want it to be fake. It's got to come from your heart and it's got to be real. So you just don't talk the talk. If you got something to say, say it. And most times when they do, and they have all spoken, speaking of the veterans, and when they did, it was poignant and it was to the point, and it was exactly what needed to be heard by the group. Because one thing that you understand about team sports, when you get inside that locker room, you understand what's going on inside that locker room. So you know why and how and what and all those different things. So normally they've thought about it because they feel it. So I encourage them to communicate and love each other. That's my biggest thing. Because if you love each other, you go the extra mile for each other. And if you just like each other, it's kind of not it.
I know you've been big on there's the game and then there's the fight within the game.
Yeah.
How'd you feel about, you know, the very first opening night, the fight from your team?
I mean, I obviously didn't win the game, but I thought that there was fight there. It's not still to the level that we want. But because I thought that, like, in the first quarter, in the first half, there was some spunk in the defense. In the second half, I thought that we came out and there was a bit of, you know, we were second to the ball. We didn't react the way that we need to react. Like, it's, you know, games online. Like, when that happens, we're punching first. And that, you know, there are parts of this that we all have to learn together. And that's what I told them today is, like, listen, we in this together. Like, we going to win together. We going to lose together. I'm going to be the one taking all the bullets. I'm okay with that. But one thing that we're going to do is we're going to do it together.
I'll end it right there, Dougie. You ain't going to take all of them. Mm. Fan base going to make sure of that.
Yeah.
But you're going to take some because there's going to be questions asked about Keon Ellis in minutes, just as there were last night. Everybody is going to have a opinion on the way that this season should be coached. Mm-hmm. And that's the difficulty of having a, you know, a public facing job like this.
Yeah.
You know, we're in a very fortunate position to have one of those. We may have had some fun with it, but people have opinions on how we do our job. Mm-hmm. And how interviews should be done, and the way that certain people should be talked to. And that's just kind of part of what comes with this. Mm-hmm. Doug has that to, like, times 1,000.
Right.
Because he's got a very, very passionate fan base who is very, very passionate about their players. And that's just kind of one of the unique components to all of this is Keon Ellis is one of their players.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they feel like Zach and DeMar are, but Keon is theirs. And they are adamant that Russell Westbrook isn't. Mm-hmm. Keegan Murray is. Mm-hmm. I think Domas is. But unfortunately, you know, Zach and DeMar aren't. And I like both of those guys a lot. I wish more of the fan base would come around on those guys. But, you know, That's how people fan, and that's okay. But Doug is going to have to answer those questions. Again, he's not going to take all of the bullets. It's nice that he says that. Mm-hmm. He's going to take a lot of them, though.
Yeah. And I mean,
he's going to take a lot of them.
It's a pressure cooker, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being, at least here in Sacramento, being the Kings head coach is a pressure cooker. Every move that you make or don't make in every single game, this is kind of what I talked about the other day when you talk about, like, the top markets as far as, like, attention on the NBA. This is one of the top, like, every single move. You think in Memphis right now they're talking about how Jalen Wells should have gotten 15 minutes instead of whatever.
Sure,
Nah, we spent an hour and a half on Keon Ellis looking at the times when he went into the game, came out of the game, who else was in, who he subbed in for. This is a pressure cooker.
Yeah, and the
in
other
game one.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other that was opening night for Doug too. And Doug was not operating with the complement of DeMontis Sabonis and Keegan Murray. And unfortunately, I don't know who will be back in for him. I know Keegan won't be. We do know that Neat Clifford won't play for him tomorrow, and Neat Clifford will be reevaluated in a week. Neat obviously started for Doug Christie last night, played really well on the defensive end. But, you know, in Doug's attempt to kind of find combinations, he probably put a few out there that caused a lot more harm than good. We talked about, and I was with you. I kind of left you out to I left you out to dry on this one earlier, and it wasn't intentional. I was with you on Max. Like, I wanted to see Maxime Raynaud out there. I am one of the people who thought Maxime Raynaud could play right away. I'm still really curious to see Max with Domas. I'm curious to see them both on the floor at the same time. But, like, there are minutes where Max, you know, we talked about that transition from the third to the fourth, and we went over those numbers exhaustively from this moment where it was, you know, I think it was a 15-point game to where it fell to a 5-point game to where it fell to a 5-point deficit. Mm-hmm. Like, we went over that exhaustive. Like, Maxime Raynaud was out there with, like, Dario Saric. You know, when DeMontis Sabonis and Keegan Murray come back, how many times is that going to happen? Right. And it's Doug trying to find something. And we saw Malik close the game. We said that it's not who starts, who finishes thing that he kept saying. And I know it's a cliche, and I know a lot of coaches say it. We kept saying there's a reason he's saying this. And we saw it a little bit last night. Malik was in. Dylan Cardwell was in. There's no scenario where I would have predicted that.
Right. Close the game.
Like, I absolutely, the most likely scenario, the craziest lineup that I expected last night was a closing lineup that saw Keon and Malik both on the floor with the other guys. That's absolutely what I expected to happen.
Right.
I did not expect Dylan Cardwell to be out there. But I'm really happy that Matt George is here with us. Matt George. ABC 10 and the great Locked On Kings podcast. Matt, we got all the ups and downs last night in Phoenix. Your overall feelings about the way the game went last night?
Before I start with that, I wanted to make sure to say Jesse Tapia is the funniest member of this show and one of the funniest guys in Sacramento. Jesse Agreed. Almost made me crash my car this afternoon when I was driving in, and someone was talking about, oh, you know, Damian, you were talking about Portland canceling media availability. And Jesse just said, why? What happened? Oh, I almost drove off the road.
Jesse's deadpan sense of humor is the funniest.
It's the delivery. It's the delivery for me. Jesse, never change who you are, my friend. Well, if you missed my video of me screaming into a pillow last night, that's about how it what sums up the emotions from that.
Hope
first
it has
game.
To do with the Kings.
Oh, we're talking to the Kings? Oh, I was talking about my relationship. Oh, I just got it.
Oh, well, that you didn't help yourself with that line, but so you were screaming into a pillow, man. I wish this show would grow up. For God's sakes, I wish this show would grow up.
Ooh, how do we save this? Where do we go from here?
I missed that video, Matt.
Yeah, well,
thank God.
There's a website. There's some age restrictions. Yeah. Maybe you can find it. I just wish I could just focus on that first half and like Doug Christie could bottle up that first half. And it made me think of a line that Doug shared in training camp. And he said, like, he told the guys at one point, like, y'all messed up because you showed me that you could do it. Mm-hmm. And now that you've showed me that you could do it, now we're going to demand more. Like, we're going to demand it because you showed me. That was during training camp. Now the Kings have messed up because they showed their entire fan base, hey, we can do it for a half. But the second half was just, unfortunately, like, the wheels fell off and the Kings took their foot off the gas, whatever analogy you want to use. Sacramento completely fell apart. And I understand basketball is a game of runs and a 20-point lead isn't what it used to be. De'Aaron Fox used to say that all the time in Sacramento, and I didn't like it then either. And I understand Domantas Sabonis and Keegan Murray were out. Well, we've seen those two play and the Kings blow leads like this over the last handful of years. Yep. It's just all too familiar, regardless of whatever excuse or circumstance. It's the first game. Russ hadn't played before, blah, 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 blah. It you shouldn't blow a 20-point lead in a game that you were that firmly in control. And I know Doug Christie after the game talks about defense. That's his MO. That's what he is all about. But the Sacramento Kings could barely score the basketball in the second half. That, to me, is what's concerning. I mean, the Suns scored over 60 points in the second half. Look, that you want that number to be under 60, of course. But I still felt the defense at times was fine. It was okay. It was more than enough for a team that's supposed to be as good on offense as the Sacramento Kings are to win the basketball game. They just went cold at the wrong time. Zach LaVine went from red hot to chucking bricks. DeMar DeRozan got woken up by Dylan Brooks a little bit, but he couldn't hit a free throw. So it's not all blame on one person, two people, or 10 people. Like, everybody has to wear a certain element of that game. But unfortunately for Kings fans, it's an all too familiar scene that a coaching change and a front office change and some slight roster changes shockingly didn't get rid of.
Mm-hmm. Matt, what's your take on, or your thought process on, the Keon Ellis situation? We had a lot of dialogue about that today, about the 12 minutes he played compared to 18 for Westbrook, 27 for Monk, 23 for Nate Clifford. What's your thoughts on Keon last night and potentially going forward?
Yeah, I heard your guys' conversation about this earlier. I thought it was a fantastic conversation. I was looking forward to adding to it. Guys, I'm under a pretty significant impression that the belief amongst the Sacramento Kings organization is that Keon Ellis is more replaceable than people are making him out to be. And I think there is this belief in Sacramento, and history would suggest, that Kings fans fall in love with a player or two based off of the hustle and the way that they play. Typically, they're young players with these kind of underdog stories that the Kings and Kings fan base latch onto. And while I'm not bringing that up in any kind of way to undermine who Keon Ellis is as a basketball player, like, I think I have a pretty good understanding that the Kings believe that if they were to lose Keon in free agency, they can find a replacement for him. There are players like Keon Ellis out there. And I think what's unfortunate is if Keon Ellis were 6'7", 6'8", we wouldn't be having that conversation, and they would have paid him already, because those are the type of players that every single team wants. But every team could use a Keon Ellis. I don't know why Keon wasn't in the game. I think he should have been in the game, but I think this is a further reflection of truly how this organization views Keon. And I mean, I know you guys were joking earlier about, is it Vivek Ranadive? Is it ownership calling in saying, don't play the guy? Like, I can tell you firsthand, going back to last year, that Mike Brown was the one to initially make the decision to have Keon play in the first place and give Keon opportunity over some of the guys on two-way contracts and playing in Stockton that higher-ups would have preferred play over Keon at the time. I'm not using that to defend Mike Brown at all, because, of course, he made mistakes, but this has been happening. This has been around Keon for a while, for a couple of seasons here in Sacramento, which is why, even with the coaching change and Doug Christie, even with the front office change and Scott Perry, Keon seems to be, in a short sample size, just one game this season, getting similar treatment, to where if someone's going to sacrifice their minutes, seems like it's going to be Keon.
That was interesting. Do you agree with the Kings? Is Keon Ellis easily replaceable?
No, I don't. Because I think he.
So you know what? Actually, that was a stupid follow up question. Let me try this differently, because you said that you believe there's people in the organization who feel this way. This is the second front office group and the second coaching staff. Is this a prevailing thought that's running through multiple coaching staffs and multiple front offices?
Yes. I don't think this is the same people here have the same opinion. I think that opinion is shared or has been adapted by newer people here. And I understand that to be the case based off of the decision to pick up Keon Ellis's option early in the offseason. We can talk about financially, it gave them more flexibility to give Dennis Schroeder money or whatever. If Keon Ellis were a priority, as much as we believe he should be a priority, then they would have gotten something done then, just like they got something done with Keegan at $140 million total over 5 years. They got that done even with Keegan out because Keegan is a priority. I just don't think Keon is viewed as much of a priority as the fan base believes he should be or is. And I think that's the whole point. Again, I think the organization feels that Keon is a popular figure and loved by the fans because of the way that he plays. But if he were to leave, they could find that elsewhere. They could find someone else to replace that. I don't necessarily fully agree on it. And to go back to your first follow-up question, which I thought was fine, D'Lo, the messaging is what doesn't make sense to me. If you're Scott Perry, you list out these six or seven kind of features or traits of who you want this Kings team to be and how you want to play. If Keon doesn't check all seven of them, I don't know who does. Doug Christie talks about the way he wants to play. Seems like Keon Ellis would be a perfect fit for Doug. And yet, I think there's just an understanding in Sacramento or a belief amongst that organization that Keon's a good player. We value Keon. He's an important piece of this team. But he is not as expendable as we believe him to be. And there are priorities higher up on the list than him right now. Or there were during the offseason, at least.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, I understand it. I understand it. I like Keon as much. We talked about it just a second. I like him as much as anybody on this roster. Like I love his demeanor. I love what he brings to the table. I said it a year ago, and I still feel this way. I think he has all defensive team capabilities with how he's able to guard. But I do believe, and I talk about this with the insiders a lot, I do believe you can find those type of players rather easily. It's almost like and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe Kyle Shanahan's wrong, but it's like Kyle Shanahan and offensive linemen. Like, I'm not spending the second overall pick on an offensive lineman because I can find somebody that can get the job done for cheaper and later in the draft. Like, that's kind of how I feel about wings, defensive-minded wings that are 3-and-D guys. I do believe you can find those guys all over the place. I don't know why the Kings
can't.
I don't know why they can't. I have no idea why they can't. We named four guys yesterday on the Oklahoma City Thunder who are second-round picks. Picks number 40, 46, 55, yeah. Undrafted, Lou Dort, guys like that. Like, they're all over the place. Dylan Cardwell, I'm not saying he's great. He's an undrafted guy. He was closing out the game for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can find guys like that all over the place. And that doesn't mean that you don't try to sign Keon Ellis or you don't try to bring him back. But I don't think you break the bank or do everything in the world to sign him or maybe even play him in certain situations.
Yeah, I want to clarify a couple things kind of building off what Kenny said there. Number one is it's not that the Sacramento Kings aren't interested in bringing Keon back. I think there is the hope and the belief that come February or March, whenever he's eligible to be extended, that they will get some sort of deal done. You know, the insiders were throwing out a number. Kyle Madsen threw out like $12 million a year, like a four-year, $48 million deal. And he's just total ballparking there. I don't know if the Sacramento Kings would be willing to pay that much for Keon Ellis, or they feel they need to pay that much for Keon Ellis. Maybe they feel they could get him for $8 million a year. I have no idea. I'm not privy to any of those financial conversations. But I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm saying as the Sacramento Kings don't value Keon and don't want Keon here. Mm-hmm. They do. They're just, there are other priorities. Like to them, getting Dennis Schroeder in this building for whatever money they needed to put on the table to get him here was way more of a priority than bringing Keon Ellis in or extending Keon. And that might send off alarm bells to Kings fans. And I don't necessarily blame you for it, but that was Scott Perry's approach to this team. The other thing I wanted to address, because I've seen it a number of times in the chatty house and on my comment section, whatever. Why don't you just trade him then? Why don't you just trade him? Because Keon Ellis makes $2 million. So what are you trading or what are you getting of value in return unless it's a draft pick, which I don't know how many teams are lining up to give you a first round pick that means anything
for
Keon Ellis right now.
Not for an $11 million
player. Yeah. Like so you'd have to attach another player or two to Keon to get a player of, we believe, Keon's value back in return, because those guys are like $15+ million players per year. Like if Keon were made, that's why we heard so much about Jonathan Kuminga and the Warriors wanting to get him on this value of a contract. So it's a better trade piece to go out and target a star if he were to become available to give Steph Curry one last run. Like the money is what's important here. That doesn't mean that Keon doesn't have value. It's the money that is attached to Keon in a cap situation where every team is strapped for cash right now and doesn't have a lot of wiggle room because of the apron system. It's just hard to move Keon for any kind of value in return. You're certainly not going to salary dump him or just send him off for nothing or for scraps unless Keon shows up and tells you, I'm not re-signing, you better get rid of me, which may very well happen. I don't have any indication right now, and there's no reason to believe that will happen. I think we need to wait till February to make any sort of judgment on this entire situation. But if I'm Keon Ellis, I'm sitting there on the bench going, boy, I had a good game. I could have helped you get some stops there down the stretch. I could have won that game. And you decide to play Malik or Neek or whoever over me. All right, I'm paying attention to that.
Well, I think Keon is welcome to pay attention to that, but like Malik was playing well yesterday.
For sure.
And I think part of the dangers in evaluating games last night, like when you have a lead like that, when you're up 20 and obviously your offense has to disintegrate for a team to come back, there's always that hope, Malik, Levine, and DeMar was already playing well, that they're going to find it because they had it. They had it within this game. They had it during this time on the floor in this arena. You're hoping, oh, okay, that shot's dropping again like it was in the first half. Okay, Malik found that moment. He got it. Okay, he hit that one behind the arc. We're off and running again. All of those guys were playing at a level during that game where it's like, I understand why Doug stuck with them. If they were playing like trash and Doug stuck with them, yeah, if I'm Keon, I might feel a certain way. Neek was playing really, really well defensively. It's why the news today is just brutal. And then right. You have Dennis was playing well, yeah. Right? I thought all of the guys that Kings fans disliked the most played really well last night.
Even yeah, in the I would agree with you. Oh, sorry, go Casey.
No, I was just going to say even in the fourth quarter they all picked it up and decided to play well. I'm sorry, real quick, 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. This is crazy. There is a commercial for Force right now.
That's great. That's great.
They're listening to us.
Tommy's coming back. Shout out to Stars.
But yeah, I thought those guys in the fourth quarter played really well. And that doesn't mean Keon couldn't have been out there and helped as well. But it was like, man, who are you taking off the court in that situation?
Yeah, I think if we're looking at like a play-by-play thing, and you can't really sub play-by-play, it doesn't really work that way. But like there were a number of times where it was very clear that Phoenix was attacking Malik. I thought Malik played some of the best defense he's ever played in his career last night, to be honest. I thought he was as active as we've seen in terms of playing in front of his man or staying in front of his man. But there were times where he stayed in front of him and they just went right through him, right? Like there were a number of moments, whether it was Gillespie or whoever, was targeting and going after Malik in that fourth quarter. So maybe there's a situation there with, I know Malik's having a good game offensively and he is a creator for you in a time where games can get chaotic like they did down the stretch of that game. So I understand Doug's decision to stick with him, but hindsight's 20/20. Maybe that's a moment where, hey, things are unraveling a little bit. Keon, get in there and help us settle this down. Help us take away some of these buckets that they were converting on, which were very similar shots, by the way, to what they were getting in the first half. They just started falling because momentum is a silly thing in the game of basketball. That's just like that first half. I thought Zach LaVine, I've been telling you guys and telling people on the podcast and social media, like Zach has stood out to me defensively throughout the entire preseason. And he put the clamps on Devin Booker in the first quarter of that game. Like Devin was having a hard time getting through Zach LaVine. Like that doesn't mean Zach played a perfect defensive game, but I saw growth there. I thought DeMar DeRozan was playing some fantastic defense last night. So there's certainly things to take from that game and go, okay, bottle that up. And it makes us feel good. But you have to get the result too. When you're up 20, you didn't blow a 20-point lead to OKC and OKC. You blew a 20-point lead to a Phoenix Suns team that, I'm sorry, no disrespect, they are not a good basketball team. And you know what? Maybe the Kings just aren't either, because they let that game completely fall apart for a Suns team that, I mean, most of that run the Suns went on, Devin Booker was on the bench. Like, that just can't happen.
And that's how it goes sometimes. Like, you just you need a burst from your other guys, and you get it. I think one thing lost in this conversation is something we talked a lot about during the preseason. We talked about the way Malik started the game. Malik was the only bench player to score for a while.
Yeah.
I think Keon was the next guy to kind of get going, if I remember correctly. But when those substitutions started, it was Malik and it was no one else. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, again, I understand there's a handful of problems from last night that resulted in them losing to a bad Phoenix Suns team by four. A lack of production from that second unit has been a problem through the first four preseason games, and now through that's not fair. Maybe not so much the Laker game, but it was certainly a problem last night. And while Malik was able to mask that for a little bit, Keon was able to contribute a little bit. At the end of the day, you know, you're depleted right now. I'm sorry, this is tired and played. If your number's called, you got to go. Mm-hmm. Like, and you've got to find a way to contribute. And the more that you don't, the more that second unit looks really, really bad, just flat out bad.
I think this is one of the toughest aspects of Doug's job too, because Doug, if anything, he's a fantastic communicator and he does a phenomenal job of relating with you or relating with players. That's just who Doug has always been. And I think Doug is naturally going to run into mixed messaging issues because, and you guys were talking about this in the show earlier, he talks about defense. We needed to be better defensively, but you had so many guys out there that are known for offense. That's balancing the way this roster is constructed, which has always been a problem. And again, I'd say 85% of this roster is not Scott Perry's roster. It's what he inherited. Like his roster doesn't necessarily match his words. So you're going to get moments like that. You're also going to, I get what Doug's saying about defense, but when you fall down by 9 points in the fourth quarter, you need scorers out there to close that gap. Specifically, you need guys that are hitting threes, and Monk was hitting threes. Zach LaVine was hitting threes. I think Keon probably could have hit a few more threes than he did, but like that's why some of those offensive players were out there too. So this is going to be a battle and a balancing act of this is what my roster is versus how I want them to play. And Mike had a horrible time navigating that. And Doug is trying to do better with that. So we have to take the messaging, I think, with a bit of grace too from Doug.
Yeah, I agree. Tough loss last night. Rebound against this crazy juggernaut that is the Jazz.
Yeah.
Oh. Or as Casey would say, oh, brother.
I'm trying to spin it in a way that the Jazz got that out of their system and the Kings got that frustrating loss out of their system. So you regroup and you punch them in the mouth on Friday night in the Golden One Center. That's how I'm setting it up.
I certainly hope so.
That's how I'm selling it.
Speaking of Friday night, what you got going on? Because it's Kings
great
home opener,
question.
Sac State, and high school football. Where is Matt George going to be at?
You know there's only one place Matt George is going to be at.
Okay.
I'm going to be at the Golden One Center for the home opener. That's my job. But we do have a great game of the week at ABC 10. I have a preview of that coming out today. We have undefeated Liberty Ranch taking on Rosemont, who has bounced back from a terrible season last year. They're 6-2 right now, so they're balling. So we have some great high school football action on that Friday night. But your boy will be in the Golden One Center. Kevin John will be out and about, Sac State doing their thing. Man, it's a sports renaissance in Sacramento, man. It's a great time to be in Sacramento. It
really is.
D'Lo and Casey can freelance at the Sac State game for ABC 10 if you'd like. Just let us know.
I am
keyword
stunned.
Not being free.
Damien, I am so stunned at your professionalism to stay true to your word and not see Russell Westbrook's debut in Sacramento. I'm like, I tip my cap to you because I would be like, hey, sorry.
No, it stings. Like it's not my favorite thing that I've done, but I know I'll be there Sunday. I'll get to see
you're coming through for the Laker game.
Oh
right?
Yeah, I'll be there Sunday. I'll be around a lot this year. I'll get to see my guy play. But I mean,
are you gonna be there? Are you gonna do the same thing? I'm gonna be there for like the first quarter. Like
I'm not.
You're not doing.
I'm just going straight to Sac State because what's gonna happen is I wind up not leaving.
Yeah. Well, and it'd only be another quarter.
Well, that's a good point. Oh, very funny. No, everybody's funny. Hey, FBI, why don't you investigate this guy? As a matter of fact, I hate it here. I'm leaving. We'll see you here tomorrow at 10 a.m. Big thanks to Matt George. Make sure you follow all his great work over at ABC 10 and, of course, his incredible Locked On Kings podcast. We will see you here tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Vamos Price Picks.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.